Fan Broadcast Network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, fellow Fargo Files. Welcome to the season finale of the ABTV Fargo Season 2 After Show. Make sure that you follow the network all over social media at AfterBuzz TV. I am Lex Michael. I'm also all over social media, all of the talky stuff where people say things to each other electronically at the Lex Michael. And starting on the far side of the table, I am here with
Dave Child. I'm at Mr. Dave Child. You can find me at DaveChild.com and all over the internet there.
And joining us for the first time is
James A. Janisse. You can find me at James A. Janisse on anything and Practical Folks on YouTube.
Cool. So, obviously, the focus of tonight's after show is going to be the season finale, episode 10, Palindrome. And we are going to run that down like it's a Gerhardt distracted by aliens. But before we do that, James,
yeah.
As it is your first time joining us, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about your thoughts on this season overall. This is, of course, a culmination of everything that we've been watching for the past several months. Mm-hmm. So, everything that's happened tonight, how does it reflect your feelings about the season overall? What are your feelings on the season overall, et cetera, so on and so forth?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay,
good. And that'll do it for us tonight.
No, actually,
I got a question just because we've been talking at one another like forever and just hearing each other's opinions. So I'm curious about like how did you react to the aliens of last episode?
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was well earned in a show that's always been a touch absurd. I mean, season 1 you had the fish falling out of the sky.
Right.
You know, if you can do that in a show and it doesn't like pull me out of it, I think Aliens is like the next logical step.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
You move from fish to aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty quickly.
But
I feel like there should be an in between there somewhere.
Stepping stone from fish to flying saucer.
Yeah, rivers of blood, something like something, that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there should be something in between. But now we have in this episode was amazing because it was the kind of calm down. It's something big and absurd happened, and we always talk about how we've been talking about like how the movie and the show is all about how something crazy happens. Crazy happens, and then at the end of the day, you still go back to your family, and you still lay down in bed with them and with your entire family,
yeah,
and
then everybody,
and you know, everybody.
Come on, kids,
and it's just a whole nother day where you just do your job again.
Yeah, so season 1 ended the same way,
right?
It was, as did the movie,
getting back to work. Yeah,
yeah, and I think that's where we talked about the name of every episode in every episode of our little AfterBuzz thing, but this time it was not like named after a absurdist piece that I could find or surreal thing. It's just palindrome. If people don't know, it's the same thing forward as it is back.
Yes.
And it drives me crazy that the word palindrome is not itself a palindrome.
Yeah.
I feel like that's just lazy. Someone should have, like, whoever invented that. Anyways.
Existentially frustrating.
Yeah. So, and I think it was named that because it's all about how where it begins is where it kind of ends.
Sure.
Where it's about you just normal people having a normal day of work. Something crazy happens, but they go back to the normality of it at the end. But at the same time, things have changed.
Of course,
lots have changed. This episode was in itself interesting, crazy, and it really like showcased every single character that was still alive really well.
And everybody gets a resolution. Even if that resolution is not necessarily a happy one. I don't think anybody that we're left with necessarily has a bad ending. I mean, nobody else, I mean, with the exception of poor Ed, we don't really see any named characters die at this point.
The other Gerhardt from Buffalo.
the other guy. Oh, well, yeah, him. But yeah, God, my, he was that guy.
Yeah, I liked him a lot. I thought of him as this season's Key and Peele. Came in late,
sure.
Provided a lot of fodder.
Died horribly. Right.
Died horribly.
Yeah. Sure.
Nazi dresser, though.
Yes. Yeah. That was the guy, if I'm not mistaken, that's the guy that a few episodes ago I said reminded me of the character whose name I don't remember from that 70s show.
Right.
The one who isn't Ashton Kutcher or Wilmer Valderrama or Topher Grace.
Hyde?
Right.
Hyde.
That's the one.
Hyde.
Yeah, that's
Hyde.
Him. Yeah.
It's good old
he's,
Hyde.
He's Fargo's Hyde.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and I don't think he's even a Gerhardt. He's like a hired gun. It was.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, he's a bit different from them. But we do get, we also do get some closure on, what's her name? The Gerhardt that was shot.
Simone.
We finally see a
death
body
confirmed.
in this
right.
Very haunting opening montage of all of the Gerhardts that we've lost over the course of the season.
Yeah, Otto, who I thought Otto died on the porch, and I was a bit surprised he died
dead
in the
at the table.
Room.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, he made it inside. Good for you, Otto.
I don't think he was making it anywhere.
No.
I mean, bolts were going into the house.
He was rolled inside. Maybe he was shot inside the house and then onto the dining room table. But anyways, we see the Gerhardts are really wiped out. There's only one Gerhardt that we didn't get to see in this episode who's off in a prison somewhere in the jail.
Yeah, Charlie.
Yeah, he's the one remaining Gerhardt, and I can assume that after this he's probably, like, given up the family business. Maybe he's...
Well, you could tell in the brief glimpses that we got of his forays into criminal activity, it's not his forte.
Right.
He's not wired like his dad or his uncle. So I would think, especially in a world where he comes out of jail and he's got no family to go back to, I don't think there's any risk of him trying to start up another Gerhardt crime syndicate.
Right, right. So that kind of put a closure on the Gerhardts, but we do have the Blomqvist, who we followed. So maybe they're the first people we should talk about.
Okay.
Now, throughout the episodes, we were talking about how we thought they were foreshadowing an ending that mirrored what Peggy kept seeing on the TV.
Yes.
That they were trapped in a location, there's a bad guy at the door... There's a good guy that shows up right at the last minute and saves them, and then maybe in the end doesn't quite save them. And the idea, one of the things we keep talking about is the idea of a hero that's supposed to come in and save the day and never quite does. And we think Ronald Reagan symbolized that.
Yeah.
And the aliens
are the antithesis
symbolism.
To that in a way.
Yeah. So I was right with Peggy where I thought... Everything that was going to happen when they run into the supermarket, they're trapped inside the meat locker, which
of
is
course.
A great palindrome for Ed.
For Ed,
he's where it begins and ends
in the same place. Yeah,
yeah, and surrounded by meat. That's his life as the butcher. And then you know he starts to get smoked out, and Hansi starts to look. Just like Bob from Twin Peaks.
The whole episode had a kind of Twin Peaks feel.
Also,
to it.
Bob a palindrome.
Yeah, maybe the simplest palindrome.
Yes, quite possibly. But that was exactly the first thought that I had during the, and we'll jump around a little bit, but during the Betsy's Raising Arizona dream, where they do almost the exact same thing. Of course, it was intentional. I mean, this episode, I think maybe more than any other, I noticed more specific nods to Coen Brothers movies. Mm-hmm. That being the first and one of the more obvious, but in that dream sequence where she talks about seeing a potential fracture in this piece and you see Hansi in the flames. It's Bob.
Hey, right. I have a question for you guys. After that dream sequence, I had the troubling concern that maybe Lou wasn't necessarily safe and that maybe season one could have been like a splintered time zone, timeline. And I really started to get nervous. It really like put me on edge that she was like, I saw this future, and then I saw maybe it didn't happen.
Right.
And like any other show, I would be like, well, whatever. But this one, I was like, wait a minute. What if season one was a different timeline?
You know, to be honest, if you had told me at the end of this episode, like if Noah Hawley and all of his post-mortem interviews went, yeah, you know what? As it turns out, the entirety of season one was a dying fever dream that Betsy had.
That would
hurt so profoundly, so deeply, but I'd go, well, aliens.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Yeah, but at the same time, by the way, my mic was unplugged, so this is me in the room now.
Oh.
So hopefully I wasn't totally quiet.
Oh, I heard you.
Okay. I think I just sounded like I was like, hey, I'm
over here.
But now I'm back. I think it's important that Fargo has this foot solid in reality. There's like a moment that it's, and I think that's what Peggy was going through during that moment when she was being smoked out and she thought she was like in, essentially just in that Reagan movie.
Well, she was pulling her last foot out of reality at that point.
Yeah, but it's, and the reason why it was a surprise that it wasn't happening is because it felt like they were foreshadowing it the entire time. Yeah. So when she started just saying everything we've been thinking, which is like, and talking about, where she's like, this is just like in the movie. This is just like in the movie I saw. This is just going to happen. I was like, this is an interesting turn, because now she's like with the audience on this one. She's she's following the action, and she's kind of, it's like in the previous episode with the voiceover where they were talking about Hanzi, like Hanzi's backstory.
Yes. And his motivation and for his going motivation, after Ed. And
which was so odd. And I was like, this is such like a well-written show. Mm-hmm. Why are they just saying things out loud? But in this case, it was perfect because it was totally false. And it kind of showed the adjustment from crazy aliens, everything's happening, back to reality.
Right.
Oops, there goes gravity.
And maybe that's why they chose to do that in the last episode. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, spell out the subtext so that when they seemingly did it in this episode, it was like a big old rug being pulled out from under us as, no, that's not reality at all. That's just what we were expecting.
And also, I think in the last season, I think from what I remember of it, is it does end in kind of a big, everyone dies, everyone like is a big climax just right in the last episode where you see them go back to normal just kind of right at the tail end of it, but there's still, the whole episode is still kind of a climactic, everyone is like, it still feels like it's part of this epic fiction.
Yeah, because it has Malvo being killed, Key and Peele, forgive me for not remembering their character names, but they get killed.
Lester goes through the ice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I also, we got that in the previous episode. Like, I was thinking about it after watching the finale. It was, and we mentioned already in this conversation, very much a denouement to the rest of the series and what had just happened prior. I feel like it has to be, because how much bigger can you go than the massacre in Sioux Falls and the aliens without literally blowing up the planet?
Yeah, and you know, I think the best representation of that is the way that Ed dies. Like, it was just very long, slow, anticlimactic
death. Very quiet, and very, too, we're talking about how it's very much back to harsh reality that maybe you're not prepared to face, and how Ed is essentially, as he's dying, telling Peggy, even if we both make it, I don't think this is going to work.
Right. It's also, Peggy's someone who wants to be the hero of her own story. And she's always looking on the positive side of things. And in last episode was her chance of being, she was the hero. She was like, she knocked out the guy and ran away and didn't care. It was the, you know, it's just this flying saucer, Ed. Just keep going.
Yep.
And this time, so she's not expecting, after all of that, she expected the flying saucer. She expected it to be crazy. She doesn't expect this quiet, sad ending where the dying words of her husband is, I think we should get a divorce.
Yeah.
Which is so brutal. Yeah. And the fact that Ed, but it's a perfect closure to their story, because it's finally Ed just coming to reality himself and just realizing that they're too different, that they're just on two separate paths, they're in two split screens, they're just not, they're not in the same world. So it was a perfect ending for him in that kind of quiet, and his ability to also give up everything for his family, which is a big theme throughout the show. Yep. And a big thing that comes back.
And that was absolutely, especially in season two, that sacrificing all for your family. And Lou speaks that, makes that subtext text and ties it back into the myth of Sisyphus when he talks about how it's, for men, that's the boulder we're pushing up the hill.
That's my favorite scene of the season. Because it's
him telling the story.
Yeah, him telling that story, which was actually based off a true story. That actually did happen.
I thought I had heard about something like that.
But it was also because he talked about the masculinity. And the masculinity of, like, of the people of the Midwest and of Fargo. And something that we've talked about on the show being kind of a running theme throughout Fargo. Mm-hmm. Is someone who, like, you know, you see Lester, you see William H.
Macy.
I almost said Gracie, and I was like, nope, that's the wrong.
Yep.
That's a far more troubled person of the Midwest.
just a little bit, actually.
Just a little bit. But he's, but they're people that have, they can't be alphas, or they have a problem becoming the alpha male, and so mm-hmm. they fall apart in response to it. And it's only people like Lou who are able to maintain it and manage it well. And he,
yes.
in that scene, he openly talks about that and about how that struggle isn't something of pushing that boulder up the hill and letting it fall down again isn't something to despair about. It's that struggle is what is their burden, but also their privilege.
Yes, absolutely.
Because they get to do it.
Their male privilege.
Yeah, male privilege.
Oh.
Which is actually, no, yeah. I think that's actually true.
Yeah, because, you know, obviously Peggy has a lot of problems, and right. when Lou tells her people died, he's not wrong, but she also isn't wrong in, like, her complaints about her life in that time era. And
yeah,
I thought it
true.
Was interesting that Lou, this, like, you know, he's just a moral guy, unadulterated morality in this show.
Yeah,
just like dismisses her concerns, and I don't think that we should think of him as a misogynist or anything. But
because I don't think he is because of the way he treats his wife and how he lets his wife do most of the police work.
Yeah,
like
it acknowledges it too.
Yeah, and I think that scene I noticed that because she had points that were very strong and were very much of the feminist ideals that were coming out of the time period.
Yep.
And then it seemed like Lou shot her down, but I think it's because at that moment she's trying to make herself the hero again.
Mm-hmm.
She's trying to make herself the hero of the story and trying to use all this stuff that is true. And she has heard while she keeps trying to go to conventions and stuff and to flower hotel rooms with two facing flowers on them. So she says this stuff that's true, but then is shot down because just because they're true doesn't mean they're true for her.
And it doesn't justify.
It doesn't justify.
She needs the reality check that Peggy people are dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she'd absolutely love. She's in the back talking about, like, maybe I can do my time in California. California, maybe I'll see a pelican.
Yeah.
Right.
That's all she wants in this world.
Yeah, she just wants a pelican. She just wants to look outside. I still thought, I predicted last episode that we were going to see her running a support group in prison. Like, doing everyone holding hands and being like, let's talk about her feelings. And
if there was one more episode,
that
would be it.
That would
sure.
be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so I guess we should talk about Lou and Lou's family.
Yeah.
And what happens, especially with you mentioned the fever dream last time, the Betsy's fever dream.
Yes.
Yeah, which is...
Which, what specifically?
Well, it's straight out of Raising Arizona.
Yes. And of course, we saw, and we can talk, obviously, there are a number of ways in which this episode tied directly into season one, and we can talk a little bit about how we felt about how effective all of those decisions were.
Right.
I don't know about either one of you, but when I saw... Alison Tolman and Keith Carradine and Colin Hanks again.
Yeah.
I felt the emotion of it. It got a little misty for a couple of seconds.
Yeah, it felt like a good tie-in, and it felt like a good reminder of what the future holds for this person who we've only seen as a kid
mm-hmm.
this whole season, and just to be reminded of the woman that she becomes.
Yep,
and
great woman.
Yeah, and also I think in large part due to Betsy. So it was, and then you also see the burning Bob Hanzi, and I think that was foreshadowing to kind of show what Hanzi becomes after this season.
So do we want to talk about that now?
Right. I mean, we could talk about that now, and I also want to talk about Hank's big moment too.
Yes, which is a wonderful resolution.
Yeah.
Let's hit Hank really fast,
Hank's
and then
office?
We can.
Are we talking about
Hank's office?
This wonderful. And by the way, I'm really happy that Hank survived being shot in the previous
episode. I thought
episode.
He was gonna go.
Oh, I had faith.
Yeah,
I
said this last episode, but I feel like it was going to be Hank holding the hand of Betsy, and in a dying moment, Betsy's gonna go, what's with the symbols? What's with? And then he's gonna be like, aliens.
Yeah, and die. Yeah, we all and thought it was about aliens.
Yeah,
right?
We all did.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think that's important, and I think they purposely did that. Of course. Think they showed the, you know, there's almost like a spacecraft in a lot of them. It feels like it's all part of it. But I think, and I think the real reason behind it, his feeling that there should be a new form of communication that we can't all communicate properly, is perfect.
It's amazing. Yeah. It fits. You see why, especially he talks about how he fell into that after he lost his wife. He had all this extra time to ruminate on these armed conflicts that were occurring all over the world. And it's all about, yeah, maybe if we could communicate better, we wouldn't be doing this. And it's literally just him wanting to make the world a better place through more effective communication. And it just shows so clearly what a good dude Hank is.
Yeah.
It also is another side of the masculinity that we've been talking about too, I think. Because it's while it's a burden to, you know, to kind of feel like you're the person to keep protector, to keep things going, to keep the family going, there's another side of it too where you can't openly talk about your feelings. You can't openly communicate without feeling like you have to be polite, which is something that's in the Fargo-verse from the very beginning.
All over the place.
Yeah. It's just like, before anything, it's never good versus evil. It's evil versus being politeness.
There's decency.
Decency.
Yeah.
And and as far as the masculinity thing goes, I think, you know, a tenet of masculinity is problem solving. And so that's how he deals with the grief of losing his wife is, okay, how do I solve the biggest problem?
Right.
Which is all the problems.
Yeah.
And he sets to it. And
also he wants to figure out a way to communicate, to just talk to people, just talk your feelings. His examples for how to talk is, you know what, and how pictures are better than words is, you know what a house is. You know that a square with a little top on it is a home, and you know that a heart is love.
Yep.
He's just, his whole reason for this is just to communicate how much he loves his family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's written so perfectly, that scene, because right before he talks about what the symbols mean, he openly says, I'm just so happy. You'll know, like, when the angels come, because they'll have the faces of your children.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And he breaks, and it's a perfect Ted Danson moment. That's, I think, his best scene of the season, because you see him saying something he feels is important to say, but also right away regretting it, because he has that, like, that male, I can't talk about how much I love my family.
Of course.
You know, it's just like, and then talking about how, like, the symbols means he wants to communicate more openly. It's perfect writing.
Well, I agree with you, and I love that scene for so many reasons, not the least of which being, especially after last episode, we saw Betsy have her fall, and of course we get the reveal in this episode that the pills she was taking weren't placebos, but they were in fact killing her.
Yeah.
We got our reminder, our very clear reminder, that both Betsy and Hank, in the years between season one and season two, both go. We know that that's coming. We have been painted a very clear portrait of just how mortal and finite they are.
Right.
But I'm so pleased that after everything that has happened to everybody this season, they got that scene at the end where they could be together and be a family and have that experience, that closeness, that together, that love, that warmth. Because to lose either or both of them before the season was over.
Right.
And I think especially with modern TV, a lot of people feel that, you know, closure for a character means death.
Sure.
And, you know, a cancer sentence right off the bat in the beginning of a season and getting shot in the penultimate episode in the case of Ted Danson, it's easy to think like, oh, okay, so we're going to get closure on these characters, they're going to die. But I think we got closure for them in this story. Like, that's what I love about Fargo, is that it's so good at telling a complete story and wrapping it up and, you know.
Right. It's about subverting those expectations, but in not a pretentious way.
Mm-hmm. They're not doing it just to subvert it.
Yeah, they don't subvert it by going like, oh, you thought we were going right, but we're going left.
Like, Simone's alive.
Yeah, but instead they're going like, we're subverting it by just not, you know, we're going to go right. So we're just going to stay at the fork and you can just see the right ahead of you. So why even tell you about the right?
Yeah.
You know, so why even like, so, and I think it's, in Fargo, it's important that big things happen off screen. And mm-hmm. I think that happens a ton of times. And like last episode, we even heard like her fall down off screen. Mm-hmm. And then, but that was powerful enough. And this is just a bigger version of that.
So I wanted to then to some of the points you just made before we get back to Hanzi. Then let's talk a little bit about Mike Milligan and his resolution, because he opens this episode talking. He sees himself as he's conquering crusader. He is the king.
Yeah.
He talks about his act of kindness, his act of cruelty. He goes back to Hamish. We get to spend a little time with Hamish finally, the great Adam Arkin, who directed this episode
and last episode
and the last episode as well. And for all intents and purposes, Mike Milligan won. He was able to spin this entire situation to his advantage. He was able to get out without being executed. He gets the credit, essentially, apparently, for helping eliminate the Gerhardts.
Right.
And gets promoted. And what that means is not at all what he was hoping for.
Right. I for one, was really happy. We said in the last episode that I hoped in this episode we would get a strong Mike moment. Because the last one had great setups.
That could have been it for Mike, too.
Yeah.
The last episode was just him leaving. It's like, okay.
Yeah, but I felt like we needed one big Mike moment.
And we had plenty
of
time.
And that's what we got. He got to be like, declare himself king. And I kind of felt like this wasn't going to end right for him, because he kept saying, like, I'm the king. I've done this. I've ruled it. I kept going, slowly roll, Mike.
Yeah, and he does it in such a, like, a typically Mike, like, whimsical fashion. Like, no schnitzel, like, just American food.
By the way, we've been joking all season about the aliens in one respect or another, and when we watched the penultimate episode, Dave and I had been joking all season about, wouldn't it be incredible if the massacre at Sioux Falls was capped off by the arrival of the aliens?
Yeah.
So, of course, when that happened, my brain exploded.
Right.
I think, Dave, maybe yours did as well.
Yeah.
We had also been joking all season, wouldn't it be phenomenal if Mike Milligan turned out to be from space?
And when he enters,
people of Earth, I'm home. And I went, is this it? But no, in keeping with this episode's return to reality, unfortunately, it didn't pan out that way. But I got very excited when he entered that way.
Well, I mean, he's been representative of an outsider, of an alien, kind of the entire time, not only being like the only black guy in the Midwest, apparently.
Sure.
But
also, the only black guy in that specific mob that and mafia. I mean, Adam Arkin's character really, like demeaned him.
Disparages him, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been him and Hanzi really against all these, the white people that have been kind of controlling them this entire time. So I kind of, like, I expected Mike to be in the same place. I kind of figured that Mike was either going to be dead or king. Himself, and I thought the same with Hanzi. He was going to be dead or a king by the end of this. And when Mike becomes... So, when he goes into that office building and is basically introduced to the 80s...
Yeah, exactly.
What it was kind of like a perfect analogy for just, no, this is what crime is now.
Yeah, it's corporate, it's not individual...
Which has also been a running theme throughout the entire season.
Right.
The Kansas City mafia encroaching on the Gerhardt Syndicate was a metaphor for big business creeping in on family-owned enterprise.
Yeah, and that's why Reagan is a character.
Perfectly fits.
Yeah.
But but Hamish literally says, Mike, you gotta get a haircut, the 70s are over.
Yeah, get rid of that bolo tie.
You also have to, like, stop dressing like you're from the West, because not the West anymore.
The Wild West is over.
Yeah, you
there
can't
are no
just
frontiers.
Yeah, be the guy with the gun, come and declare yourself sheriff. You're, it's over, and this is your office, and this is it. So he's entering the corporate lifestyle, which was such a melancholy, sad moment for Mike, because of like, well, he did it, but it's not. And it was great. It was a great subversion too, because it wasn't. Usually, we're so used to being like, you've succeeded, but your entire family's dead, or you've succeeded, but you're dead, or you've succeeded, or you had to kill the person you love, that sort of thing. But now it's like, you succeeded, but your happiness is dead.
Yeah, it just means you're now just a cog in a machine.
Yeah, it's really a Pyrrhic victory, and if he wasn't so like. Again, whimsical about like his violence and his malicious
acts, yeah. I would feel bad for him. But like here, it's just it's a little sad. But I'm like, well, kind of had it coming, man.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, especially since he was just so like, I did all of this. I did all of, like you did a lot.
Yeah,
but a lot of it, you just the last, you know, final, you know, climax of everything, you just stumbled upon.
Yeah, that was a Hanzo.
You got lucky. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and where does Gale Kitchen go now? The mailroom?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
Is that where he goes?
Is he, like, is he Mike's like PA or his intern?
He's his secretary. He's just like...
answers the phone.
Yeah, that's how he answers. Just picks it up. Like, that's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he'll just be stuck in the kitchen. That's his name. All right. Well, so that's the king. So let's talk about... Hanzi.
We got to talk about Hanzi. Man.
Right.
So, real quick before we get to where we leave Hanzi in this series up to this point, I do want to touch on the moment, and it's very brief, but the moment on the street when he's hunting the Blomquist and Lou takes the shot at him and he dives behind the vehicle, almost identical to No Country for Old Men. A moment in No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, and similarly when he shoots the old guy who stopped the car to ask for like to help out Ed.
Same. Also, Mike Milligan's use of the word friendo stuck out to me.
Right. I love the show, but part of it is just like, I picture the Coen brothers are executive producers on it, but they don't really do that much on the show. They just...
collect paychecks.
Yeah, and they basically, I think they see the scripts or they see a version of it. And as long as they don't say no, they keep making them. But I keep picturing them just like sitting in their Coen castle and just like
castle.
Watching the show and being like, oh, we get it. You like us. Dude, I mean, you're just trying so hard, Noah. I mean, you can come over and just, you know, let's get some drinks. Let's just, like, calm down. It feels like just all this fan fiction just keeps coming up. I don't mind it. Mm. I love it.
It's fun.
But especially the Raising Arizona thing, that didn't stick out to me as like an exact Raising Arizona dream sequence until... And the same thing with the No Country for Old Men shooting that happened. I didn't see it until like afterwards I thought about it. So it fits seamless.
Yeah, I think they all work in context. And if you hadn't seen those movies, you would think like, why was that there? It's just part of it.
Yeah. So it was perfect. And then... So that's when we think that Hanzi's pursuing... into the supermarket.
And it turns out he just got out of there.
Yeah. And I really love how, you know, it's later revealed that it wasn't real, but, like, it just goes straight up horror movie when it's those shots of him in the supermarket, and I really like that stylistic
decision.
Yeah, it seemed
like Bob from Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
It
exactly
like
that.
Bob from Twin Peaks. And also, I think that's important, too, because it's in the last episode when we had the voiceover talking about Hanzi's motivation and turning him even more into this like epic hero or villain character, and like where is he going to go and why is he pursuing them? Why does he keep pursuing them afterwards? And then we see him realize he shouldn't pursue them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it steps into reality perfectly in that sense in this episode by just saying like, oh, I can just get out of here and I'm pretty much free and clear.
So let's talk about the final scene with Hanzi and how we talked very, very briefly before we got on mic about this scene. Because when I watched it, when I was watching the episode, I noticed, obviously, you know, it holds on the Social Security card with Hanzi's new identity. And the name didn't immediately set off any alarms.
Can I just say that I got a text late at night from Lex just being like, hey, whoa, ending blew my mind. This tie into season one. I'll let you know. And then I watched it and I was like, I don't see it.
Well,
I don't see it. And then it took me like 10 minutes and I was like, oh. So
it was,
continue.
Well, so it was a couple of things and I had to make specific notes because it was the name on the Social Security card when, of course, he has to get his new identity. And the name is Moses Tripoli, which is, as we'll get to, a name that we've heard in the Fargoverse before.
Is it actually said? In on screen,
like, I had to go and look up credits.
They mention a Tripoli. Yeah,
they do. Okay.
Yeah, they do. They do. Like, he's basically supposed to be the big boss of the first one.
So Yeah, there is the name. Then Hanzi makes a comment about how he doesn't just want cosmetic surgery to fix the burns on his face. He wants something more base reconstructive. He right. wants to be a totally new person. And then it's the lines that mm-hmm. he says to this guy. And he says his words, and I had to make this note specifically. His exact words are, not apprehend, dead. Don't care, heavily guarded. Don't care, into the sea. Kill and be killed, head in a bag. That's the message. And then we've heard almost those exact lines before in season one from right. this Tripoli character. Not apprehend, dead. Don't care, extramarital. Don't care, not related, in relation to Sam Hess's murder. Kill and be killed, head in the bag. There's the message. So we come to find out
right.
that Hanzi takes on this new identity and becomes, in season one, the leader of the Fargo Syndicate.
And did anyone else think that guy was Bear? Earlier on in the season, because like he kind of looks like Bear, he's eating in the scene that we see him in season
yeah,
one.
Maybe. I mean, you wouldn't expect Hanzi to become a fat white guy
yeah.
who gets dyed drinking soup.
He must have a fantastic plastic surgery guy, by the way.
Oh yeah. My god. The thing is, it's kind of brutal because, in a way, it mirrors Mike's evolution as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really want Hanzi to become Malvo. You know, you wanted, like, I kind of, when he started talking about changing his name and changing his face, I'm like, oh my god, is he Billy Bob Thornton this entire time? And then when I realized that wasn't the case, and then I was like, oh, okay, I think he was the guy, I think I remember the name. And then the deaf kid who they're watching play ball.
The very last time you see Hanzi, he's marching onto that field to save these two kids from these bullies.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so wait, that's Adam Goldberg, and that's...
It's Mr. Wrench and Mr. Numbers.
Yeah, that's like, that's awesome, that's great. So who's Tripoli? I'm going to look it up. Oh, he's that guy.
And now we know, because that connection has been made, we now know, for better or worse, how Hanzi's story ultimately ends. He's killed by Lorne Malvo.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want him to become, like, a soup-drinking fat white guy. You don't want that.
Like, a soup-drinking fat Indian guy is one thing.
But he's like, you wanted him to be... You wanted, like, I was like, oh, man, who would win in a fight between Malvo and Hanzi? You're wondering that. And now we find out, no, well... By the time Malvo becomes a thing,
yeah.
Hanzi's pretty much, you know, up for the count. He's the king of his own castle. But they talk about how, like, even if a new empire started, it has to fall eventually. And
yep.
we see it fall in the season one.
Yep, we absolutely see the exact empirical evidence that is yeah. what happens. So, is there anything else we want to hit? Obviously, we're going to touch on our final thoughts about not just the finale, but the season as a whole. Before we do that, there is a little bit of news, but before we jump into that, any specific plot threads that we need to hit that we haven't covered that you guys can think of?
I think we've mostly... Oh, this is the one loose thread that I wish they didn't talk about. I've brought it up before. I think it's a shame. We do not know why Lou becomes obsessed with ducks. We do not
True.
Know this.
True.
There is no hint of a duck obsession in season two, but his diner in season one is covered in mallards.
Sure.
I want to know why.
You know what? Maybe he caught a glimpse of the aliens. Maybe they look like ducks. Right?
Maybe they look like ducks.
Yeah.
That's a new one.
Yeah.
That's a new theory.
They're all like shape-shifting duck creatures.
Yeah.
Like the duck is their basic form.
Right.
Yeah.
So I also love how they don't become obsessed with aliens after this. Like,
just
ducks. Wouldn't you be like... And they even have that moment where it's like, how are you going to explain this in the thing? I'm just going to leave out the aliens.
Yeah.
That's probably a good call.
And they move on from that pretty quickly, all things considered.
Yeah, they're like, God, aliens. But what about these, like, weird symbols you did? And, like, not making the connection, like, were those aliens?
Because I was more worried about, like, are you going crazy? Are you obsessed with something? No, I'm just creating a new language that'll never work.
I'm just wonderful, aspirational human.
Right.
So, before we get into our final thoughts about the season as a whole, we do, as mentioned, have a little bit of news.
AfterBuzz TV News.
So, we knew that Fargo had been renewed for a third season. We knew absolutely nothing about it. We still know very little about it, but according to Noah Hawley in some of these postmortem interviews, it is apparently going to be set, he says he believes, in 2010.
Yeah.
Which is a couple years after season one
but
ends.
But there's going to be no characters from season one who will make a reappearance.
Oh.
Because
yes.
he talks about how it's important in the Fargoverse that you just see them have one crazy incident that happens to them in their life, and then they go back to regular life.
Sure.
Because if it keeps happening to these people, it becomes too insane.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
it's
that's
like, it's like the Die Hard series.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. He says they're always looking for ways to connect the events and the world to make it obviously all the same universe, but yes, exactly. There are not going to be certainly major characters from season one that reappear. The other bit of this news, and this saddens me a little bit, our hiatus from Fargo is going to be slightly longer than expected.
It's going to be so long.
Season 3 will not air until 2017.
Oh, 2017. No. Spring 2017.
The entire year without Fargo.
I don't know what I'll do.
I don't know. I mean, I'm can't wait to see what amazing cast it's going to be.
Yeah.
Because the casts have just been getting better and better and better. Are we going to have Tom Hanks in the next one?
He's the Ted Danson.
Yeah.
He's the Ted Danson who was the Keith Carradine.
Right.
And season three should be Tom Hanks.
I kind of wish it was a way ahead in the future so I could just be grown up Colin Hanks.
I feel like we've talked about this a little bit. Like, wouldn't it be amazing if it was Space Station Fargo?
Right. That would be perfect.
So that is the news. So since we're talking a little bit about, you said,
He has said in the post, in the interviews, that it'll be centered around a selfie oriented culture.
Yes, we're constantly taking pictures of ourselves and each other, and just about everything is documented, and how that fascinates him.
Right, okay. And it'll be like the like linked into the internet, and I think how people overshare. So I think that's what it's going to be about. Sure. Which makes sense in the world, if you think about it, because it could be just as Peggy has like an attachment from what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a character who's not able to realize all the stuff that they're posting online could actually be creating something new. So I can't wait to see what he makes.
Whatever it is, I think like season one was amazing. Season two created like the pattern.
Absolutely. Yeah. So to that effect, before we wrap for the season, guys, final thoughts overall on season two of FX's Fargo.
It was amazing. Hanzi was a surprising breakout character. You think he's just going to be a sidekick in the beginning, and then he turns out to be basically the lead.
Yeah.
Essentially.
I think it was the best thing on TV this year. It continued to shock and amaze me and surprise me. I love the chances they took with the styles, the split screens, everything. It's great. I love it.
I would agree. I would agree with you guys completely. One of the best things I've seen on television this year. I think it's in the conversation for one of the best things I've seen on TV any year.
Thanks for joining us to talk about it, everyone.
This has been a really, really fun season, and that is going to do it for us, Season 2 ABTV Fargo After Show. Where, Mr. Dave Child, can people find you on the internet?
At Mr. Dave Child on Twitter and DaveChild.com online.
James, where can people find you?
At James A. Janice on everything and Practical Folks on YouTube.
And I am all over the netty, webby, talky stuff at the Lex Michael. That is going to do it for us. Thank you guys for joining us. We hope to see you here in 2017 for Fargo Season 3. Thank you for joining us.
Executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff. We would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.